This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
NTT IndyCar Series season is here. Cars will be on track at St. Petersburg in less than 40 hours, and there's plenty of news over this past week to discuss tonight. Carlin has completed their lineup for the weekend and one car for the year by borrowing another team's driver. Their second car is still TBD beyond this weekend. We'll talk about that. And we'll throw out our guesses as to what to expect on track this weekend and for the season as well. And it's really the beginning of a new era, with a canopy providing a new look and increased protection, and the beginning of the Penske Entertainment era in IndyCar. Hello, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. Brad Huber is in our downtown Indianapolis studios. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan on location as we get set for the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg Sunday at 2:30 on NBCSN. I believe airtime here on the radio on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan is 3 o'clock. Yes, it is. 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And green flag is set for 3:23-ish coming up on Sunday from 110 laps to 100 laps. We'll talk about that and more as we get into it. And we are at the Avon location, and Kurt has decided to break the barrier. We were the trendsetters here, the first to close schools in the state of Indiana. And so my kids have been home this week, next week, and then it's a two-week spring break, so a month off from school right now. So I haven't left the house, although I am not on quarantine. I should clear that out, but I haven't left the house since Sunday. But that's kind of how I roll. I tend to just stay in the location.
You haven't left the house since Sunday.
Haven't left the house since Sunday.
It's quite the schedule you're keeping.
I spend enough time on the road. I figure I've got everything I need right here. Generally, I will venture out and have a working lunch somewhere that lasts 2 or 3 hours, so I get fresh cups of coffee. I have a few spots in town, but there's no reason to venture out right now. Let's just keep it on board. And really, that is, on a serious note, where we do have to start, because that's obviously that's the topic that impacts everyone. There's no way that the coronavirus isn't impacting everyone. And the questions we're getting asked a lot is about, you know, this is an IndyCar and a sports-related show and a sports station, is we first see the impact in events with a lot of people, which are sporting events. So what's the latest on the IndyCar race for this weekend?
No change. All green flags lined up. But I will tell you, and this I don't mean to connect the two subjects, but the story, as the coronavirus is about the most rapidly evolving story that I've seen in a long time. You know, in terms of hearing more news about NBA teams making decisions, you know, Formula One, MotoGP making decisions about how to stage their events. Nothing on the table as far as IndyCar changes are concerned, but this is a very rapidly developing story, and I'm really interested to see how this plays out over the next 30 days, 60 days. You know, we've got a lot of entertainment options, schools that you talk about, businesses, just to see how people across the country and across the globe are impacted by this story, and we'll just have to watch it kind of hour by hour and day by day and week by week.
And that's it. It is hour by hour and day by day, and things are changing every hour, and things may already post during the show tonight that I haven't seen at this point. I do feel better about the chances of IndyCar events being less impacted because they are outdoor events. For example, you saw the governor of Ohio, or maybe you saw the governor of Ohio say yesterday, we prefer anything indoors be limited to a certain number of people. So there you're thinking basketball games, conventions. But he did not specify outdoor events. And the other thing, and when you mentioned MotoGP and Formula One, how they are different, and MotoGP has already postponed their first four events. They've canceled the first event. They've postponed race number two. Race number three was to be at Circuit of the Americas, the first weekend of April. That's been postponed. And then now last night they postponed event number four, but that's an international series. And frankly, a lot of its base is in Italy, which has been one of the hardest hit countries. Formula One is a global environment as well, so you're talking everyone is flying through some impacted countries. So those are a little bit more in jeopardy than domestic events, I think.
Absolutely. But none of us are immune to the discussion. And, you know, I suspect that, there's no information that leads me to think that there are any changes coming on IndyCar's side.
I don't know what's right. I don't know what's wrong. You know, there's the school of thinking that, hey, at some point you can't stop business because then people are impacted. Because a lot of jobs, you know, mine included, if it doesn't exist, if I don't go, I don't get paid. I'm not on salary, and a lot of people are like that. And while we do say sports is non-essential, and it is, but it is essential to the people that are working in it. We're talking concession workers. We're talking vendors. We're talking all kinds and sorts of people, and most of those people only get paid if the event happens. And if you want to talk about a motorsports event, a street race, if a street race is canceled, the promoters probably go out of business because it's not something where that we can just do this another time. Now, I do feel like I said, I feel like relatively speaking, the risk is very, very low for an outdoor event at this point. But who knows what the case is 3 or 4 weeks from now. And I also feel for the authorities. There are some that think we've been a little too hasty on this and it's panic right now, and I'm not going to get into whether I think that's right or wrong, but think about it from their perspective. They feel responsibility, whether it's legal or just a feeling they have, and you're always going to want to err on the side of caution there. So it's not an easy decision at all.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind that a lot of these decisions that sports organizations or entertainment organizers are having to react to are decisions made by the municipalities. You know, I see where Seattle makes decisions, had some decisions over the last 24 hours, and that may affect people who would have otherwise continued with their event. And so you don't know what's going to happen as IndyCar or other entertainment groups like IndyCar travels to different markets. You know, does the Los Angeles market have a stance in place by the time IndyCar gets to Long Beach? Mm-hmm. Does Austin have a stronger stance than it does now? You know, and just go down the line. So it may not all be at the hands of the sporting organizations to make the decision. You know, it may come from the local officials. But at this point, green flag for a 17-race schedule. It begins this weekend in St. Petersburg, and I think we're all looking forward to it, fans and participants alike.
Circuit of the Americas, Austin is an area where the local leadership has made decisions on that front, but Marshall Pruitt had a story yesterday where he talked to Bobby Epstein and some other people involved, and it's all go right now for IndyCar. And like we talked about, MotoGP is a different circumstance because you're talking about a paddock that's based in many ways in Italy, and you're talking about global travel. So
you do have global travel from the IndyCar side.
You do. You do.
Not as percentage-wise significant, but it does happen. Obviously, you're bringing in, Dallara has individuals. Max Chilton flies back and forth from home. I mean, it's a smaller number, to be sure, but, you know, IndyCar's participants come from a lot of different markets, and so again, no reason for alarm from a event standpoint as we look at a 17-race schedule, but it is something we're going to have to watch develop, and it may be out of kind of our decision-making process and may lie with the local municipalities.
And for now, don't be offended if drivers decide to take a different approach as far as interaction with fans. Has anything been decided about autograph sessions and how that's going to be handled coming up this weekend at this point?
No, but you've got to remember that people from all parts of this operation, whether it's the drivers or the mechanics or the people who work in concessions and, you know, just all the different, quote, touch points, if you will, maybe a pun intended, but all the touch points have to consider their respective role in the game, so to speak, and that may change. You may get a different way of having your hamburger delivered. It may be, you know, the ticket taking process is different than it would have been maybe a week ago. So there's going to be a lot of subtle changes, I think, on everyone's part, and it doesn't just involve this race this weekend. I think, you know, we've seen it in various parts of our daily life, and I wouldn't expect this to be any different.
I was a little worried about Sebring coming up next weekend. Maybe not as much from the IMSA standpoint, although the IMSA paddock is pretty international.
Pretty diverse, yeah.
But there's a World Endurance Championship race also. It's the Super Sebring once again, and it was announced today that it's still all status go, and I believe they had a big meeting yesterday, so they're still moving forward, but that's definitely an international paddock. I do think that a lot of the IMSA and WEC drivers that are based outside of the U.S. have been advised, hey, go ahead and get over there now. So they may already be in the country now for an event that basically starts a week from today. I think cars are on track next Thursday.
I believe that's correct.
At Sebring. There might be cars on track on Wednesday because the Michelin Pilot race is on Thursday next week. So I think a week from today, less than 1 week, already cars on track. All right, so that's the serious part, and there are smarter people than I am that can keep you apprised of the developments on that front. Hey, before I forget, I wanted to just a little public service announcement. As I went to watch the St. Pete race last year on my NBC Gold platform, and it didn't work, and I remember this, the case last year. So when you go in and it basically says you haven't subscribed, sign out and sign back in. Because as we talked about last week, and several people tweeted that, yeah, it's unless you filled out something that says I only want it to be a one-year subscription and went to the trouble to do that, it's going to automatically renew most likely. So mine is still active, and I just had to simply sign out and sign back in. So then you got to find your password, which is always a challenge. But luckily, 1, 2, 3, 4 still worked. So it's very simple for me. But just simply a matter of signing out and signing back in. All worked according to plan. And here's the schedule coming up on Friday as far as IndyCar is concerned. The first practice is at 10:45. The second is at 3 o'clock, 45-minute practices. Same deal, NBC Sports Gold, and available on archive as well. A third practice on Saturday at 10:45. Qualifying is at 2:40. It's live on NBC Sports Gold, tape delayed, I think 10 p.m. on NBCSN. Is when that's going to air. So tape delayed qualifying for round one. Most of the time, it's usually going to be live. There is a warm-up Sunday at 10:25, and then our pre-race show begins at 2:30 on NBCSN Command at about 3:23. We're on the air until 6 o'clock. We've got the Peacock Pit Box, so James Hinchcliffe has somewhere to hang out with Chris Devoda during the weekend. Robin Miller has a cool essay and just kind of a big-picture look at Roger Penske taking over the series. So look for that in pre-race. So that's part of the deal there. And we'll get to the racing itself, but first you got to get to the race. And this is at least the third time we can think of where a transporter is caught on fire on the way to the event.
Yeah, you think about it, should have been a quiet news day on a Wednesday before the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. And I think most of us, by the time we got to our phones and our computers this morning, learned of Andretti Autosport having a fire. I'm not sure at this point where the fire started. Maybe you've learned new information. I've not followed up on the story since.
Well, I think it was like 15 minutes away. It was
within the transporter, where the brakes or was it
a
fuel line or what have you? Could have been any number of things, I suppose, but. Some minimal damage, I'll say, because it didn't involve the race car to speak of. They said everything's, you know, good to go from Colton's standpoint in terms of competition. They needed some pit equipment that needs to be replaced. I know they got some help from some other teams. This is a small community. What's amazing about the story is that it happened so close to the racetrack. You drive 1,000 miles from Indianapolis,
yeah,
and then, you know, it's at the Ulmerton exit there on 275, which you can almost see the racetrack from there. You know, you're within 6-8 miles of the racetrack, maybe 10, and to have that happen percentage-wise so deep into your journey.
What is it they always say? The high percentage of accidents happen within 1 mile of your home,
yeah,
or something like that.
So, you know, it's just a fluke that this happened so deep in the trip, and maybe that's a blessing because you were able to, you know, gather the equipment there and didn't have to go very far to to get kind of help from the rest of the team. You know, they bring five transporters from the race shop in Indianapolis, so. I'm sure they had plenty of spares through the paddock, and I think you'll still see Colton be very competitive this weekend.
Yeah, that's the advantage of being a big team, that they do have a spare transporter. They're sending a lot of their crew guys down a day earlier. They went down this morning. They were originally, or at least some of the crew guys, they were originally all planning to come down Thursday morning, but they already had some Andretti Autosport employees in Florida because Indy Lights just had a test at Homestead and just moved from Homestead up to the Tampa area, so they were in the area to go and take care of things. So that's how the weekend unfortunately starts for what is sort of a new team, Andretti, Harding, Steinbrenner, Autosport. So it's a merging of two teams with the Harding-Steinbrenner group last year, which already had a technical partnership with Andretti, but it is a full-fledged Andretti team on that front. The other news from this week, we were waiting to see who was going to be in the number 31 car, and we have our answer, but it's only for one race for now.
It is Felipe Nasr, who tested very well last week at Sebring. He also tested briefly, didn't get the track time that he wanted or was designed at Circuit of the Americas last month. But he will be in the 31 car Chevrolet for Carlin here in St. Petersburg. And as you allude to, there is more to the story.
Well, and also what's interesting for Nasr is that he doesn't have to get used to a new number. His IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship number is 31. He drives the Action Express Whelen Engineering Cadillac for in that series, which he won the championship. They won the championship with Pipo Durrani, a former Mazda Road to Indy driver who is very, very good. They won that in his debut season in 2018. They finished second in the championship last year, finished seventh at the Rolex 24. They won Sebring in 2019. Last year they won Sebring as well, and of course he was a Formula One driver for a couple of years with a best finish of fifth and had some really good results in junior Formula cars, including a championship with Carlin Racing. So that's for this one race, and as you look at the spotter guide, now just because the spotter guide is blank doesn't mean the car is going to be blank. Sometimes those deals end later, but I kind of get the feeling, especially since he was called up, as we talked about last week, for the test, about 12 hours before the test was about to begin, and there was another driver on hand that was supposed to be in the car. That's where they thought the funding was coming from, because the goal was to have a driver associated with funding. I don't know if Nasr is bringing any or not. My guess is he's not, because if he was, he'd probably be announced for more than this race. And then it's, well, can the team find the funding to keep him in the car, or do we have to continue to search for other drivers on that front? Now, the other car is the 59 of Max Chilton, who has the funding. The Gallagher sponsorship is his through his father's businesses, but Max doesn't want to run the four ovals outside of Indianapolis, and this was speculated on. David Malsher, I think, was the first one that wrote it, and then that happened to be, I read it while I was sitting on the floor at the hotel next to Connor Daly, so I got an immediate reaction from him, and I've told you what I knew about that. But I heard some say that Ed Carpenter poo-pooed that in the media briefings on that, but that wasn't what I heard, and Ed has signed off on it. So Connor is going to be in that car, the 59, for the four oval races outside of Indianapolis. So he will have a complete season with two different teams, but three different crews and three different numbers. Because remember, he's not in the 20 for the Indy 500. He shifts to an unnamed yet number in a third car for Ed Carpenter Racing.
So we've gotten a lot of questions already on social media in the last, day? I guess that was yesterday when that news was confirmed. But Yes, he's eligible for the championship as a driver.
A driver's championship.
There is a driver's championship and an entrant championship. So, you know, if you're thinking about the number 20 car for Ed Carpenter Racing, it will compete for a championship with two different drivers. And then as you look at, Connor Daly, he will compete in the driver's championship with whichever car he ends up in. And it right now looks like three cars for two different teams. But who knows? It could be a different combination yet. Now, last year he ran for three different teams. Best finish of 10th at Indianapolis for Andretti Autosport, but he also ran for Carlin, and he subbed for the Aero team. So,
and I think he finished sixth in one of the Carlin races at Gateway.
He did. And so, you know, I said best finish, but I think his most impressive finish was the Indianapolis race. That's, I guess, how I was alluding to it. But, you know, so you think about the driver, regardless of which car he's in, and you think about the entrant being just the car, regardless of which driver is in that car. Make sense?
Yeah.
Clear as mud.
Now, entrant points, it matters simply for pit locations if qualifying is rained out. Leader circle program, yep. You know, when you get, because some years they only give the top 20 or the top 22, the full $1+ million in leader circle. I think that's kind of being revisited now with Penske Entertainment taking over. So that's kind of TBD moving forward. Any other areas entrant points matters? Because it's the driver's championship that pays the money, right?
That's correct. There's some subtle other additional things, but for the purpose of the public, I think you've nailed it.
Yeah, okay. So that's what we know on Connor's front end. Good for him, and good for the team too. You know, and I'm sure the team, again, would have preferred to come up with a driver that could bring a sponsor. My best guess is that Connor's not bringing anything other than his suit and his helmet.
Oh, I think that's
so good for him, because I think all of the funding he could raise went towards the Ed Carpenter program that he has at this point. So this is good for him just to simply get hired and complete a full season, and it's good for Carlin. While they would like to have a funded driver, you know, finding someone that can find funding that doesn't include the Indianapolis 500 is challenging, and they want to improve their program, and it's going to be a huge help for them to have someone in that car that's good on ovals and was in this car last year.
I think it's also coincidental. It's not coincidental, but it's interesting and fair to point that it would be more difficult to find a driver whose funding was just for ovals, you know, or was oval-based. Most of your funded drivers at this point who have some money want to do, if they're not going to do the Indy 500, they're going to do the road courses.
Correct.
So it's pretty rare, I guess, to find somebody who would just have funding and would want to and have the experience to run just those four ovals. And by the way, Connor's done very well on them. The sixth place finish you mentioned at Gateway, he's had a couple really strong runs at Gateway. He hasn't raced it at Richmond, but the field hasn't as well, at least except for a couple drivers. And you know, then he'll run Texas and obviously he has experience there, and so it'll be good, Iowa as well.
And he will get the test for the Carlin team in, I think it's like April 25th, when the series tests at Richmond in an open test. So he actually will get
it's
in
March,
that.
March 25th.
March 25th. Okay, very
it's
good.
It's 24th or 25th. I guess I fly on the 24th, and it is the 25th. But
so that's just coming up
in a
couple of weeks. So that will be significant there. You know, and the incentive for Ed Carpenter, because it is a bit of a risk for Ed. This is his full-time employee that they have made some commitments to. So he was within his rights to say no. You were contracted to me, and I don't really want one of my employees working for a competitor. But as we've talked about before, Ed's a driver.
Yeah,
and
he gets it.
He understands, and I think it can also benefit Ed moving forward. Say, for example, Connor Daly wins one of these road or street course races this year and has a good season. They're going to be suitors for his services full-time, and I would think Ed would be one of those trying to put together a program for him full-time, and maybe they do go to something down the road where Ed's program is part-time, or maybe they're a three-car team where they find another driver, because I think you're always going to find drivers that are willing to do what Connor is doing this year. the road and street courses in a good car. So now this way, Connor Daly has driven at Richmond, and he's done the full season and has a little more experience. Because as much as we think he's been around for a while, he's got 50-some starts or something like that. He's still a relatively young driver that can get better.
That's true. I do agree with you. I think it would have been within Ed's right, and certainly it makes sense from his business standpoint to say, boy, I don't know if I want Connor running it at Texas and Richmond and Iowa and then at Gateway. I mean, the injury risk is higher there than some places, those four tracks, just being an oval. And, you know, and if he gets a broken hand, say at one of those races, it may affect his ability to perform or even be in the car on Ed Carpenter's planned schedule. So it wouldn't have surprised me if Ed said that. And I think, by the way, I was in the room when the subject came up at Circa of the Americas in February. And I don't know if Ed denied it. I don't remember exactly how he said it, but he certainly threw a little poo-poo-ness on having Connor drive for somebody else. Again, I'd have to go back and listen to how he said it, but he certainly gave you the impression he wanted to keep Connor just in his car. But I understand, because as you mentioned, Ed's a driver, that it's good for Ed and it's really good for Connor. So we'll all be excited to watch Connor develop through a full season, and hopefully he can. I think, you know, if he could snare his way into the top 10 and the driver standings, that'd be pretty impressive.
All right, coming up in a moment, we've still got a little more news to get to, because a driver that's done fairly well somewhere else has done a seat fitting and is going to be getting in an Indy car very soon. We'll get into that, and we'll start talking about what we expect this weekend at St. Pete and for the season as well. It's Trackside 93.5, 107.5 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter-Reay, and this is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Trackside continues. Thanks for joining us, Kevin Lee. Kirk Cavan, ready for racing. The 2020 season for the NTT IndyCar Series is here, with the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete coming up this weekend. You feel like it's race week when the spotter guide comes out, so I'm looking at it now. Any surprises we're seeing here? I'm looking at just distinguishing cars and so forth. We got to look up some of them at COTA. I like Ben Hanley's car. The Dragon Speed car is no longer blank. Flexbox is on the side of that car. Unfortunately, the 14 is blank. Now, as I mentioned last segment, just because it's blank on the spotter guide doesn't mean it will show up blank for the race weekend.
I wouldn't take a whole lot of stock in the spotter guide as the absolute gospel, because, again, teams provide information at a certain point, and you have to have the spotter guide guru who puts that together. She needs that information maybe sooner than the paint schemes are available. So, I mean, ideally they're as close as possible, but there's certainly room in the number of days between the spotter guide being produced and the cars hitting the racetrack for the decals to come on.
The main thing is the color scheme, and the color scheme is cool. It's the black and coyote red, so people are going to like that. And, you know, there probably is a pretty decent chance that it's a blank car, because Bourdais not bringing sponsorship. He's in there to basically get them going in the right direction. And so far he's had a pair of good tests. He did some good things at Circuit of the Americas and at Sebring, and hopefully that transfers all the way down to the A.J. Foyt Racing team. It'll take us just a moment, like it did me at the COTA test, to not see the Seal Master Coyne Racing with Vassar Sullivan car of Santino Ferrucci and not think Sebastian Bourdais, but that car looks pretty much the same last year as it did last year with Bourdais at the controls. Let's see, the Penske's are all going to look different, I think. So the Hitachi colors for the 1, the gray Verizon colors for the 12, and the bright yellow Menards colors for the 22 of Simon Pagenaud. The Andretti cars all look, I think,
pretty similar. You're going to have
enough differentiation, though, I think.
Rossi's at times this season is going to look like Harvey, maybe in reverse of pink and black, because in fact, we made this mistake at Circa of the Americas. Remember, he changed colors from Napa Day on Tuesday to Auto Nation Day on Wednesday, and we had a photograph that somebody automatically identified as
sure.
as Harvey, because you had that black and hot pink color scheme. And then the difference is, when you see the two cars, it's pretty easy to tell the difference, because but Harvey's is more pink than black, or maybe it's the other way
That's
around,
right.
and Rossi's is more black than pink. So they certainly have swapped the colors in the positions where they have those colors. So,
but if they're not next to each other, you're going to have
your
to
first
check
glance.
On
that. I really sympathize. I can't empathize because I've not done it, but being a broadcaster in that first practice sessions and you're trying to identify cars as they come out of a high-speed corner and or coming at you from a distance, which car that is, especially when, you know, maybe in a practice session you got cars close to each other, you know.
So looking at it, the rear and front wing end plates are pink on both cars. So you're right, there is a little more pink on the Jack Harvey number 60, and his side pods are black, say Sirius XM on the side pod, whereas the 27 of Rossi has more gray than black and says Auto Nation on the sides. But point I'm getting at here, so the team is already pushing back. They don't want to hear this is an Andretti partnership. But they've entered into that, and that's the reality of it. And when you have that car looking very identical to an Andretti car, that's going to be hard to quell that conversation.
That's right.
And I understand the team, you know, because Michael Schenck has done this from scratch. He is a remarkable story of how he has built his racing operation, and this is his business. Some of the other owners have made a lot of money doing something else. Michael Schenck is in the racing business, and he's built up a successful, you know, he started in junior formula cars, then went to IMSA and sports cars, and had a setback that most people would have said, forget you, an IndyCar, and still persevered to come and develop a successful team, did it step by step to where he's full-time for the first time this year, and smartly, he realized that this success is right now, the only thing that you do differently is the damper program, the shocks. So let's align ourselves with the people that have it figured out. Not the only ones, but one of the groups that has it figured out, and save ourselves a lot of time in trying to do this on our own. So that's why you're going to hear people, because, hey, let's face it, as a broadcaster, my job is to explain why something is happening the way it's happening. So why is this team, if indeed it does go this way, why are they running up front when this is their first full-time season? What's different? Well, one thing that's different, and by the way, I'm not saying they didn't have some success last year. They did in their partnership with SPM, but that would be the easiest way to explain. Don't count this team out. Don't be shocked if they have multiple podiums, because I think they can this year. Now, these are still all Michael's employees, and this is his team, but that one engineer is an Andretti employee, and they are in the engineering meetings with the Andretti team. So that I'm already hearing is going to be somewhat delicate on that front. But that's just from a fan standpoint, a way to kind of look at the cars. The Nasser car is solid blue with no sponsorship on the side right now. Maybe something is coming. Maybe something is not. Anything else that looks – oh, the two Arrow McLaren SP cars.
They're different looking.
So, well, they're pretty similar.
No, different, yeah.
Yeah, those are very similar, but there is a way to distinguish it, because Oliver Askew's number 7 has a blue color on the rear and front wings, whereas Pato Award's is black. That's the biggest distinguishing there. You've got to check out the wings and look for some blue on the Askew car compared to all black and orange on the number 5 car. The Dryan Reinbold Wix Filters car looks cool. It'll be good to have them involved back in a non-Indy 500 race for the first time in a little while. Connor Daly's car looks cool. It's very gray with some red highlights and the shark fins along with it. And nothing else really looks too out of the ordinary. And good this year. The 20 and 21 are different. So the 20 is the gray Air Force colors, and the 21 is still black and red and white with the Sonax colors for Rinus VK. So there's your Audible spotter guide for the weekend. Okay, so what do we expect? We'll talk season in a moment. Let's talk the weekend in itself. We start with Will Power winning the poll?
Probably, since he's won 8 of the last 10 at this venue. You know, the Penske's have run very well. Obviously, Joseph won last year's race, always a factor. You know, a couple other guys that tend to run or historically have run very well. Ryan Hutter-Reay has really been the master of the St. Pete race. The number of second, third, and fourth place finishes, top six performances he's had over the years is almost unmatched.
But hasn't won.
But he hasn't won.
He's got a second, a third, a second, a third, a fourth, and a fifth. Last year he had, I don't know if it was an engine or just a mechanical. I forget what they have. Because every once in a while it appears to be an engine, and it's a component that causes a loss of power. But whatever, he stopped early in the race and finished 23rd.
And the other driver who has had considerable success without victory at St. Pete is Scott Dixon.
Yeah.
So those two guys you'd have to put in the hat of your guys to watch based on historical results. Power you would include. And I think one of the real fascinating things this season for me, and maybe we'll even get to it in the season discussion here in a little bit, is because this will be a discussion every week, but will you see more strength from Pagano, Power, or Newgarden? And I think it's going to be more competitive within their organization. We've talked a lot about this over the last, I'll call it the Scott McLaughlin era. As Scott McLaughlin, his name and his future kind of plays into the discussion, does that impact how these three current drivers on the NTT IndyCar Series for Team Penske, how does it impact them? And does that ratchet up the internal pressure? And, you know, Power's coming off 2 wins in the last 4 races from a year ago. This is one of his best tracks in St. Pete. You know, I think you defer to him, and then you watch how the competitiveness between Newgarden, Pagano, and Power for this race victory, and I think that'll be one of the real fascinating things of this weekend.
Power finished 3rd on the pole. Remember, this is the race where he won the pole with concussion-like symptoms.
Yeah,
Turned out to be with some other kind of ailment that impacted him, and he didn't run that race. So he has won 2 times, finished 2nd 2 more times. Dixon has finished 2nd 4 times, including last year, and also has finished 3rd and 4th and run up front. Sebastian Bourdais, of course, won it 2 times in a row, basically from the back. Started last in 2017 and started 14th in 2018, but I think fell back to the back at one point in that race as well. And last year he had the mechanical and was out very early in the race. And he won the pole the very first race here back in 2003. And who won that one? That was the kart race.
That's right.
Our own Paul Tracy. Paul won that race. There was no event in 2004, and then it's been a part of what was then the IRL, now IndyCar, starting in 2005. Graham Rahal is a winner here. Any other?
Sebastian Bourdais, did you mention him?
Yeah, I just did. I said he won twice.
I was thinking about going to throw something else out there. I missed the Bourdais.
Hinchcliffe.
Hinchcliffe
will be there. He will be, well, he's my chauffeur, so he's driving my rental car this weekend, so I feel like my chances of getting to the racetrack on time and safely are significantly increased because he's my ride-sharing buddy for this weekend. And by the way, Hinch is going to be with me in the booth, so I'm back doing most of the Indy Lights races this year that are on NBC Gold. So this is a doubleheader weekend, so I encourage you to find those. He's going to do race 1 with me, and then Tony Kanaan is going to be in the booth in race number 2, so they're going to job share that one as well. And I'm sort of job sharing in the booth with Jake Query. He'll do some races when I have some conflicts later on in the season. And Katie Hargett returns with us on pit road for the Indy Lights races. But Hinch won his very first IndyCar race at St. Pete in 2013. And, yeah, that's it for active winners. It's Graham, it's Bourdais, it's Newgarden, and it's Power.
If I could give a shout-out, and this is what I was thinking when you said Bourdais, but I wanted to remind people of the new IndyCar Challenge, the fantasy game that's now available on IndyCar.com and on the NTT mobile app. And I bring that up because I was thinking about who I picked for that. My four drivers in that were Power, obvious choice. Hunter Ray, as I mentioned. And the other big dog that I really like this weekend, transporter burning aside, would be Colton Herd. I think Colton's going to have – I expect him to have a good weekend. And don't be surprised if he's in that Firestone Fast Six and potentially competing for the victory on Sunday.
How does that work? Do you pick –
You pick four drivers.
Are they in tiers where you, like some of the NASCAR ones, you can't pick from an upper tier with all four of your drivers?
So you get essentially 100 fantasy dollars.
Okay.
And each driver is given a dollar value. So as I recall, like Power is something like, and I'm going to make this up because I can't remember specific, like $28. And if you spend heavy on Power and Pagano, you may have to go with somebody cheaper.
So you need long shots. So you're looking, you know, say Rinus VK, if
he's
cheap.
Yeah, that
would
be a very good one.
Something like that in that range. So we may have to start looking into that. So I'm going to task you with that. I want you to bring the numbers and the dollar values, and each week maybe we can find
that.
We'll do that here in a later segment.
Yeah,
so
we can do that later segment. I can tell you that I like Askew as well. I think he was my long shot driver. I think he's going to be an interesting watch this season.
Well, that team's been good there in the past. So I think he and Pato O'Ward would have the opportunity to do well. So we'll get more into that and some other things. So we'll add fantasy to the program as kind of a regular aspect of it. So we'll talk more about that. We'll try to find that and do that here coming up in just a moment. Stick with us. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cobbin and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
It's IndyCar opening weekend from the streets of St. Petersburg this weekend. We were talking about the new fantasy game, the IndyCar Fantasy Challenge presented by Firestone.
Driven by Firestone.
Driven by Firestone, even better. So Kurt's looked up the numbers. So I do find this interesting. I'm not a gambler, but I especially like, I think we still like long shots. And this kind of puts a number to it. So you can, you know, we're always asked, well, who's a long shot to win? Well, it depends on who's making up the numbers. Here are numbers. So give us some of the people that from dollar amounts don't command that much, and we'll talk about who we think has the best chance of. Do you have to win or finish on the podium? How do you score points?
Well, you score points. There's a point based on the same, I think it's the exact same point standings the way IndyCar gives points. 50 points for first, 40 for second.
Okay, so it's not a winner-take-all thing.
No,
okay.
You score points based on how your four drivers do, and you get up to $100. This does not, so I'm looking at the IndyCar mobile app. I cannot find immediately where the full field is, but I can find my four picks, and it shows the dollar figures, and I think this will be representative. So for my $100, I get Will Power at $30. So 30 is, I know the top tier guys are in that first level of $30. For $26, I get Colton Herta. For $24, I get Graham Rahal, who has won a race there. And then my last $20, I looked at the group of about eight or nine drivers, or six or eight drivers, who all command the $20 value, and I got Oliver Askew. So you can mix and match. You can go with two of the top-tier guys at $30 each and get $60 worth of investments on your big dogs, and then you got to go, you know, smaller with two kind of lower-level guys, if you will, based on the point values. And I do know how the points are, or the dollar figures are aligned early in the week. I'm not going to give you that because, you know, they don't want to be influenced. But
I wanted the full breakdown.
I can't give you the whole breakdown.
You've let me down. You've come with incomplete information.
I'm giving you some choices here.
I want you to have a list for me next week, dollar amounts.
I'll give you everybody's.
That's what I want. What is Ben Hanley? How much will it cost me to get Ben Hanley? That's the lowest?
That's the lowest.
Okay.
So they're all between $20 and $30. There were.
And you said Askew was at 20?
Askew was at 20.
So that's a good pick.
Rinus VK was a 20.
Oh, that's a good pick,
too. Ben Hanley was a 20. Sage Karam was a 20. And then the top-tier guys, Rossi, Power, Newgarden, Pagano, they would all be $30 picks. And you have, you know, it'll give you a running count. So if you pick two 30 guys, and obviously that's easy math, then it'll show you still have $60 left to pick two more drivers. So then you probably have to go with two $20 guys or just pick three guys.
Yeah, and that's what I would do.
But you've got to, you know, score the most amount of points. So if you can't leave your position blank. So it's a good, easy. I think the interface on this is better than it was, much better actually, I would say, than in the past. The tiebreaker, and by the way, that you pick the podium as well. My podium is Power, Herta, Dixon, and your second way of a tiebreaker is the fastest lap of the race. I picked 105 miles per hour, which is just a tad more than the track record.
Okay. Well, those are good picks for top three. That's always
not my first rodeo. I've been to St. Pete a time or two. I think I've been to all of them except Paul Tracy's.
You know, you just don't – we don't know a lot of things right now.
Well, that's the beauty of the early part of the season.
So I'm going to add Rossi in there. I'm going to put Rossi in for Herta.
Are you finding your ability to pick?
I'm gonna try to pick here. Boy, I really like the willpower, but I'm gonna go Pagenaud. So I'll just go different. I'll go Rossi. I'll go Pagenaud.
So now you're $60 in. You got 40 to go. You got to go with two low level guys, and low level is a relative term, but we all understand.
I like the ask you pick.
You can have.
So
the
I'm gonna do Pato Award then, just to be different. And then I'm going to do Jack Harvey.
Okay. I think Harvey's a great one.
He might be more than 20.
He might be 24, but we'll see. Depends on.
I'm going to take 20 since you didn't bring the list, so I'm going to count him at 20.
I do know who made the list in terms of the point values, and he might have given Harvey a little bit of Andretti technology consideration. So we'll let you slide on that one, but I'll give you Harvey and Award, Pagenaud, and Rossi.
All right, we'll talk season thoughts in just a moment. And also, we'll talk about the aero screen. This is significant, it not only for the look of the car, for the safety, but also it's going to impact performance. Who's going to figure out the dynamics of this quicker than everyone else? Jimmy Johnson. There's some NASCAR scheduling things, and it impacts IndyCar as well. All that and more to come in hour number two of Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
There has been a couple-year process that we've been going through to get to this point. With this project, we're like, what can we do that's a total driver cockpit safety solution? Red Bull, a couple years prior, had built a piece for their F1 team or their F1 car that we really liked. We called them and asked them if they would be interested in helping us. Red Bull immediately jumped on this opportunity to help us. Between Red Bull and Pankel and Dallara and PPG, Aerodyne, we've had some of the best and smartest people in the world working on the solution.
I think we've seen different versions. This is kind of, I think, fixes a lot of areas that maybe didn't cover everything. This is huge for drivers and for safety of the sport.
So this is a screen, so it stops frontal impact. There's a upper frame which stops things on the top. It will withstand 34,000 pounds. But 34,000 pounds is basically six Chevrolet Silverado pickups. The actual windscreen, there was a ballistic test done. A 3-pound piece shot at 140 miles an hour, 180 miles an hour, 220 miles an hour. So it withstood all of that. It's really robust.
I'm so happy that we have it. It's really a huge step in safety. It's the best of both worlds. You've got the halo and you've got a screen. When you've driven it for a day, you took it off, you feel pretty naked. There's so much protection there.
It's hour number two. Thanks for staying with us. Trackside on 93.5, 107.5 Fan. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan, Brad Huber in our Indianapolis studios tonight, ready for the NTT IndyCar Series season opener with the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete coming up Sunday afternoon here on the radio and also on NBCSN. Check your local listings for the channel in your area. And a good piece that IndyCar put out last week, kind of summarizing one of the major storylines. The new season is always a big deal. We'll get the changes from the offseason to those that haven't been paying close attention. But this is groundbreaking. The car looks different. It will perform slightly different, or at least it has the possibility of doing so. And it's a revolutionary safety device. And I understand not everyone's for the look of the car. And if you don't like it, that's okay. Everyone is allowed to have their opinion on that. Just because you say you don't like it doesn't mean you're wrong. I think a lot of us are kind of feeling the more I see it, the better I feel about it. My opinion has always been, though, I have been less concerned about the way it looks because I am all for what it can do from a safety standpoint. So we've seen it now in action. This is going to be significant this weekend because really the only concern that I can think of so far, well, there's a couple. People are always talking about fire, just like they did when seatbelts were first mandated, and IndyCar has come up with an idea to deal with that, what they can take off the whole process in about 15 seconds or so. But heat and comfort in the car, and you're going to get your first good test in Florida.
Yeah, it's going to be warm, at least warmer than most of us have been used to here in the Midwest. It'll be, I think it'll be a non-story after we get through Friday. I think Friday's going to be interesting for people, and they'll talk about it. We may hear more about it deep in the race on Sunday if drivers get out of the car and say, boy, it was warm in there, or I had no issues, or give us a report of some kind. And then I don't think it'll be a story again until we get to Indianapolis for the 500. I think it'll be a St. Pete and Indianapolis story this season, and we'll see how it impacts things. I think it'll. Some teams are going to figure this out just like every other modification to the car. There will be some people who figure it out quicker than others, and it may not necessarily be the teams you expect. Although Penske and Ganassi and Andretti would be good places to start, especially given the volume of cars that they'll field. But I think it'll be an interesting discussion point for this weekend, and then I think we'll all just kind of move on and appreciate it for what it is. And I like it from the front, I think, or from the side view, looks really cool.
Yeah.
The front maybe a little boxier, but I think as we see additions or modifications over the course of time, I think it'll look a little different from the front view.
In my mind, it's still the coolest looking race car out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I agree.
And beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Other people may disagree, and that doesn't mean you're wrong. I like the look of this a lot better than the Formula One car with the halo.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about it. I think especially now that we've seen the teams kind of brand that space as they choose across the bottom or across the piece across the top, you know, I think it'll really blend in well with most of the cars.
As has been mentioned, and James Hinchcliffe mentioned this on our conference call earlier this week. Okay, it's one thing that you're a little bit hot, but nobody's done more than, you know, 7, 8, 9 laps so far in the testing that they've had. What happens when you're in there for, you know, a full 25-lap stint? And does it even get worse if there's caution, if you lose what little airflow you have? So it could be a factor. Those that trained well in the offseason, and Hinch mentioned last week on the show, you know, they've got a sauna now at PitFit that they're dealing with those kind of things to try to make it as uncomfortable as it can be. Circuit of the Americas in late April could be a factor when you're talking about
some hot
supreme
days.
Heat. So, as I've said with some people before, though, I'd rather be really hot and have to learn how to deal with that than have a piece of shrapnel come and hit me upside the head.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the benefits far outweigh the negatives, and I understand there's going to be some impact on physicality with the drivers. But look, I mean, and we're going to get to a story that's going to be very top of mind here soon, and that is a 7-time NASCAR champion driving one of these cars. He's not in for necessarily the windscreen and the heat element. He's in for the power steering or the lack thereof in these cars. So it's just different things for these cars, and it'll be interesting to see how the lack of power steering is handled by one of the great drivers of our generation.
So that's kind of what I wanted to do here is talk about what's new and what's different for this season. And I'll go ahead and go out of order since you mentioned them, but I think that is one of the things that's new and different. So you've got these drivers with great success in other disciplines that are raising their hand and saying, I want to be an IndyCar. Scott McLaughlin, who's going to drive in at least one race. And American fans don't know Scott McLaughlin, but motorsports people worldwide do know of him. And those that know more about it than me tell me this guy is the real deal. And we saw it in one day of testing where he was third in his second day in any kind of a Formula car beyond an F1600 car, which he hadn't been in a decade. So he is a global motorsports superstar. He is as dominant as anyone has ever been in Australian supercars. Fernando Alonso still wants to come back and run the Indy 500 again and wants to do multiple events. And then Jimmy Johnson, in the middle of his season, which, by the way, has started off pretty well. He's someone that is in line in the early going to be able to make it into NASCAR's playoffs. In the middle of their West Coast swing on a Wednesday, he's in Indianapolis at the shop to prepare for a few races in 2021. That tells you how serious he is.
And I don't think you can put a disconnect between the two stories you've just brought up, meaning the aero screen has given some of these drivers a little more freedom to raise their hand. Jimmy's a good example of this. He said, that aero screen makes me feel more comfortable about getting in an open-wheel race car. So I don't think I know you can connect those two stories to a degree. Now, Fernando Alonso, you know, he would run that if he had to run it in his bathing suit. So, you know, the 500. But the aero screen is going to be impactful to a lot of drivers, I think, moving forward who want to try this. I haven't asked Scott McLaughlin if that was a difference maker for him, but I'm certain that he's in favor of having the aero screen. It certainly is a plus. And you've seen guys like, and we heard in the opening, Scott Dixon and Will Power speak about it. They've been very forward in their approach and very sincere in their comments. This thing, it's been ready to run really since the first test back in October. They've still got some things. Obviously, they want to keep working on airflow, and this will be a good litmus test with the heat in St. Pete. But I think those are curable situations and things they can modify. But fundamentally, this thing's ready to go, and it's been ready to go since October.
Yeah, Will said, and that comment we heard was from the open test at IMS, you know, I feel naked without it, even after just a few times in it. But he said, I think this will factor into maybe some drivers wanting to extend their career and feel more comfortable moving forward. For Jimmy Johnson, this is, and by the way, he's going to test the day after the Barber race for Arrow McLaren SP, and J.R. Hildebrand has lost another number. So the joke already going around is J.R., if he is in that second car for Dreyer and Reinbold this year, should ask to run the number 44. That means Lewis Hamilton would come and take that
right
in the next year. But he lost the 66 to Fernando, and even a guy that's not driving in a race this year in Jimmy Johnson, Jimmy's already going to have the number 48. So good on Dreyer and Reinbold for not doing what they probably had the legal right to do, is say, no, we have the rights to that number, and we plan on using it this year. So JR will come up with another number, and whichever one he chooses, we'll see what drivers in other disciplines use that number. But it's going to be fascinating to see how he goes, because if he's at all in the top half of the field, I think that's going to be remarkable.
Jimmy Johnson?
Yeah.
I don't think he will be.
I think that's going to be really tough to do. That's what I'm saying. If he, because I'm not going to count him out.
No, I'm not counting him out.
But I don't know how.
I don't know how he runs in the top half of the field. I mean, you know, on an oval, if you have a good car and you can figure it out, certainly the Indianapolis 500, you know, if you're a talented driver and there's enough time for practice, but you show up on a road course, these cats are dialed in, all of them. I mean, you know, it's impressive as you look down through this field, and I was counting up yesterday. There are 15 drivers that will race, 12 drivers that will race at St. Pete who have won races in this series, and six of them have won double-figure number of races. And there's going to be, I think, 15 drivers over this course of this season that have won races that compete in this series.
That's actually down some.
And it's down some.
I've counted up races before where there have been 16 or 17 that have won a race before.
I wasn't going to say that's actually a down year for IndyCar, but 15 guys who have won races? No, there isn't a sport, you know, you'd have to really count all those, you know, glory years of NASCAR to find a percentage of the field who have won that many races.
For Jimmy Johnson, I think this opportunity to do something next has probably made it a lot easier emotionally in his final NASCAR season, because, you know, every race, he's coming to the end of a brilliant career, and that can be depressing. But he's not seeing it that way because he's looking at it simply as, well, I've done all I can do here. Now I want to try something else. And he's going to get to try something else.
Well, I think back to times, you know, when I – not really – I was thinking about when I've changed jobs, but I've only done that once. But when I was moving, whether something was changing in our lives, and we always were better off when we found the next house or the next job or the next opportunity for one of our family members. And it's just natural. You move into something very quickly. I don't know if you're doing it to make yourself feel better, but I think the excitement builds. You know, you've already checked out. I'm not saying Jimmy's checked out of his NASCAR season or his NASCAR career, but
it might take some pressure off him, too.
If he's flown to Indianapolis midweek on a West Coast NASCAR circuit, he's sort of checked out because the old Jimmy Johnson or the old Jeff Gordon or pick your driver is so immersed in what they're doing that they wouldn't give up their Wednesday before a race weekend to be flying back to halfway across the country. So that tells me he's a little bit focused already on 2021, and good for him. I think this will be good for the sport, but I'll tell you what, I think the barber test is going to be really interesting, and I'm kind of secretly lobbying. I wouldn't tell my wife this, but I'm secretly lobbying to stay on that Monday after barber to watch this because I think he's going to be, I don't want to say well off the pace. I don't think that's fair. He may not get to run a true hot lap, you know, or you know, segment, but I think he's going to be significantly slower than the mid-pack guys just as a minimum.
You know, you could make an argument that if he's just faster than anybody,
oh, that'd be amazing.
That would be good, but I think he will be. And did anybody think Scott McLaughlin would be third fastest? So a great driver is a great driver. The difference is Scott McLaughlin's discipline has been road course racing. Jimmy Johnson has done a lot of road course racing and is very good at it.
Not a lot, not compared to what Scott's done, for example. And here's a couple other differences. One, Scott had been to Circuit of the Americas, raced at Circuit of the Americas. Two, he's with Team Penske, which is going to be really good. And by the way, just to clarify, I think Scott was fastest on really what is his first day at Circuit of the Americas because day one was essentially a washout. So wasn't that day two when he was P3?
It was the only day they got up to speed.
Yeah, so really that was his first day.
Talking about his first day was the test at Sebring 3 or 4 weeks before that.
So I think Jimmy's going to, you know, Barber's a really difficult place is kind of the other element to it, in my opinion. I think it's one of the toughest places from a technical standpoint for a driver. And for Jimmy to be up to speed with the IndyCar field as close as it is, I think it'll be a miracle. I think, and when I say off the pace, if he's a half a second behind the slow guys, I think that would be pretty impressive. I think he's gonna have trouble getting up to speed at Barber.
And if he is slow, that shouldn't be seen as an end to this experiment
because I agree.
Would be a part of the process. Because the one thing that he is going to have the ability to do is test a lot. If they're testing already in April, for something that won't start for another year, they can take advantage of some rookie opportunities this year for extra test days, and he can be in the car in the off season. So he's going to have a chance to get a lot of laps in, and I do think he can probably find that time in 5 or 6 trips.
But one trip, I think he's going to be...
One trip's going to be tough.
I think it's going to be difficult.
It's going to be fun to watch.
Oh, it's going to be great.
So the other big thing before we get back to On Track is, let's address it again, the major story in the offseason is a changing of the guard. Penske Entertainment, Roger Penske and his group now control IndyCar, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, including the 500 and Brickyard 400, and IMS Productions. What's different this year?
Well, there'll be a lot of things that maybe you don't see right away. There are going to be some changes in the St. Pete weekend that I'm not sure have been announced, so I'll hold off. That may be announced tomorrow. And just some fan interactions, and I know the coronavirus has changed some of that, but I think you're going to see just an opportunity for the Penske kind of style, the Penske touch, so to speak, and you'll really see it in Indianapolis. You're already seeing it with, like, they're changing out the entranceway at turn one on the roundabout at 16th and Georgetown. Those lettering letters of Indianapolis Motor Speedway are going to be lit, backlit. So you're going to be able to see it better. I know that there's going to be, we talked about the video board at the Pagoda. You're going to see more flags and festiveness around the facility. And I think, you know, for starters, those are going to be the kind of things you see. I think he will turn his attention. Right now, his attention is on the Speedway and the 500 and the Brickyard 400. And then as those two events really take traction, I think you'll start to see more on the IndyCar side for 2021.
Let's get to on track and what we are seeing different this year. Changes. Well, first of all, at this race, this is the largest car count outside of the Indy 500, I believe, since 2013 is the note I've seen, with 26 cars at St. Petersburg.
Yeah, it's great. You know, Dreyer Reinbold, as we talked about a little bit earlier, is going to be in for more than one race, more than the Indy 500. They've announced Toronto, and I believe there will be some more. I expect there to be some more races still to be added. Dragon Speed, you know, there are more cars like that. And I think it's going to be fun to see. 26 cars, a lot. And some of these venues we'll go to this season, 26 will be a lot at St. Pete. But it'll be good fun to watch.
Basically, about half the cars have changed in some fashion. And some of those are small changes, like Santino Ferrucci going from the 19 to the 18, and it changes the official name of the entrant. Colton Herta, still in the 88, but going from Harding Steinbrenner to Andretti Harding Steinbrenner. You know, kind of a changing of the guard with Kanaan, Bourdais, Hinch, no longer full-time. Now, Hinch and Bourdais are already working on trying to become full-time in 2021 moving forward. You know, I like this dynamic we have of young drivers. We've got the last two Indy Lights champs and Oliver Askew and Pato Award, and you've got Herta and Ferrucci and, you know, name.
Pillow.
And Pillow is, there's five rookies when you include Felipe Nasr as well, and Ben Hanley is still technically a rookie at this point. Rinus VK is the other rookie who's finished runner-up in the Indy Lights Championship. But then you've got some legends in the sport. So I looked it up. Drivers with 10-plus wins. You got Dixon, who's third all-time with 46. Power, who's in the top 10 with 37. Bourdais, 37. That's seventh all-time. Hunter Ray has 18. Kanaan, still around on the ovals, has 17. Pagano has 14. Newgarden has 14, and then you've got Elio for the 500 with 30. So that's a pretty good group of guys that have been doing it for a decade plus.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, it's interesting. I found it interesting, at least, that Simon Pagenaud and Joseph Newgarden each have 14. I think the race between those two is going to be fun to watch over the next couple years. And, yeah, I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of championship pedigree. Bourdais, Power, Newgarden, Hunter Ray, Pagano, and then, you know, a guy like Rossi who's been right there. Obviously, Kanaan's won a championship as well. So, you know, there's just a lot of talent in this. They seem to say it every year, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue with it, but it's about as deep a field as you could ask for. And I think largely what that says is that the discrepancy between the haves and what we used to call the have-nots doesn't exist anymore. The have-nots can be, you know, fast six qualifiers and potential podium placement. I think I counted 15, if let me have my number right, there were 15 drivers who had top five finishes last year and like nine teams or 10 teams. That's pretty impressive that they were all in the hunt.
Who adjust the new characteristics of the aero screen? Who adjust to some of the changes they've made internally? I don't think these will be any way negative because they know what they're doing, but it's a new dynamic at Ganassi with Scott Dixon. Michael
yep.
Cannon is now his engineer. What impact does Craig Hampson have moving over to Arrow McLaren SP as the R&D engineer? He's
yep.
not on either a car, and they have made significant changes. They've added a lot of personnel, and they're working with the Formula One group remotely, and that's kind of one of the things Craig is involved in, is heading up that communication back and forth. You touched on the internal battle at Penske. I think that's going to be fascinating because the fear is that, well, what if this is still a three-car team next year? Somebody's going to be left without a seat if Scott McLaughlin is as good as people think he is. Can Alexander Rossi, breakthrough. Russ Thompson sent us this. When you think about it, I didn't realize this. We know it's Penske, Ganassi dominated, and Andretti at times as well. But since 2006, every championship has been won by Penske or Ganassi, except for two. Two won by Andretti in 07 with Dario and in 12 with Hunter Race. So that means the last five have been those two teams. And when we get to it, Rossi is my pick this year, although I apologize. I think I might have picked him last year. I don't know. I'd have to look up.
I'm
going to
go
see.
With Power, by the way. I think Power's – he ended strong last season. He's – you know, he went through a really difficult results season last year that got hot at the end. You know, he's capable, as we've talked about, of winning three or four in a row.
I think there are five that are as good as any other one.
Yep.
And it's just who is the better debater to convince you that their pick is the correct one. All three Penske drivers have won championships and are still on top of their game. Scott Dixon and Alexander Rossi. Can someone like Colton Herta or maybe even Felix Rosenqvist?
I wouldn't totally discount Felix, but
what about Ryan Hunter Ray? Ryan Hunter Ray, if he ups his game, he and the team just a little bit, and finally has good luck, could be there. It's a big jump to be able to win the championship, but I cannot 100% count out Ryan Hunter Ray from winning the championship.
Well, especially if one of those drivers on the outside of your big five wins the Indy 500. You know, I mean, that really gives you a launching pad to stay in the hunt. I don't know who I'm going to pick for the Indy 500, but I would expect I'm going to make the bold statement that I think Colton Herta is going to be in the conversation at the end of the Indy 500. I think he'll run really well. He only got three laps last year, and I think had qualified well and was kind of a tiger waiting to pounce in the race and just never got that opportunity. But I think Colton will be, if he were to come through and win the Indy 500, you know, that would keep him very much in the hunt.
Certainly. Double points, extra points. What is it, 9 points if you win the pole as well?
Yep.
So it's something like 110
or 12.
110, 12 points when you talk most laps led and all of those things. You know, I think the Dale Coyne Racing dynamic is fascinating this year with losing Craig Hampson.
Yep.
And losing Michael Cannon.
And losing Sebastian Bourdais.
It's limited, but in the testing so far, they've looked good. I've heard great things about Alex Palou. What does Ferrucci do in year number two now that he is the leader? I think it could go either way for Santino Ferrucci. Obviously, that's not a bold statement. Always can. But I think it's possible that he is someone that takes another incremental step forward and is 7th, 8th in points. I could also see him.
By the way, that would be a big jump because I think he was 13th.
Yeah, that would be a big jump. But what I'm saying is he could get – I could see it going all wrong too because all it takes is a couple of DNFs, lose some confidence,
well, he had
head down the wrong path, and all of a sudden it's not that hard to finish 17th in points.
No, and, you know, as I said, I think he was somewhere around 12th, 13th last year, and he had incredible luck on the – actually, luck's not the right word. He had incredible results on the ovals. Those are going to be difficult to come by and to repeat. I mean, he may run just as well, but he had three fourth-place finishes on the ovals out of five races, and he finished seventh in Indianapolis. Those are extraordinary results on oval tracks. Anybody would take four of those types of finishes. So, you know, his luck on the ovals was really good last year. Now, he may run just as well and not be as fortunate with reliability and staying out of trouble and not being collected in somebody else's trouble, which he certainly could have been in the Indy 500 last year. And then does he take a step forward? I think this is what Dale Coyne's talking most about for 2020 is can Santino take the step on the road courses? Can he be the kind of driver we saw at Circuit of the Americas when he's battling for really a, you know, 6th, 8th, 10th kind of position? And or is it a case of maybe a little more of a struggle?
What's Ed Carpenter Racing going to be this year? They have new drivers with Rinus Vicay and Connor Daly on the road courses, and that has been something since Joseph Newgarden and Jeremy Millis left that they have not had consistent results in.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting one. I think, you know, people are saying about Rinus VK, it's feast or famine. He's either going to be, you know, in the win, place, or show category, or it may not go so well that he's just blazingly fast and yet has a lot to learn. So it could go, I don't want to say either way, because I think he's going to be very good, and his career suggests otherwise that it is. But if you're going to pick a rookie to win a race this year, I think you're more likely to go with Askew, a little more predictable, I guess is the word. And of course, he's older and will be more of a contributing factor to the leadership of his team, maybe more so than Rinus will be.
Oliver, I think, is very polished, very methodical. He is someone that I think they have an interesting dynamic there. Pato seems to be one of those guys. He's going to get in there, and he's going to try to drive the wheels off of it, whether it's a good setup or not. He's going to make the most of it. Yep. And Oliver is – you're probably going to see him get better throughout the weekend, that it's going to be steps, and he's going to really analyze and study. And I think Oliver might be someone that you see a much different driver in the second half of the season than the first half of the season. Foyt and Carlin, the direction to go is up. And I think there is some reason for optimism with both of those teams. And we're fascinated to see how that goes with those programs as well this season. So I think we kind of touched on, there are the incomplete teams like the Dreyer and Reinbolds and the Dragon Speeds. And I think you have to grade them on a curve here in the early going and really throughout the entire season.
The one of the others that I'm interested in seeing is Marcus Ericsson. In this relationship with Felix Rosenquist and Scott Dixon, and not because he changed teams, but I thought he might be a little better in year one with IndyCar than he was, and I think year two will be better, and I think he will more consistently run toward the area that a Formula One veteran should run. We saw a good result at Detroit last year from Marcus, but we didn't see consistently strong weekends from him, and I think this will be a better year for him.
We still got plenty of other things we need to cover before we're done, and we'll get to some of your tweets to it. Kevin Lee 23, it's Trackside 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
All right, time to move into a rapid fire element, because I ran long in a couple of segments and I still want to get to some tweets, but I wanted to mention one of the things I saw in the offseason, and kudos to whoever got the get for this. Did you see Joseph Newgarden, or at least the clips on NFL Network's Good Morning Football?
I did.
Yeah, he's good in that setting, and send that tape out to other outlets. They may not know who he is, but yeah, this guy can talk about whatever you want him to talk about.
Yeah, he can talk some football. And we got a couple guys that can talk other sports. And you don't do that without some strategy involved. As you bring up him, I'll also bring up the fact that we saw Simon Pagino on a log ride at Disney World this, I think it was yesterday, in fact, and people made the comment, oh, so you're hanging on in the log ride, but you'll drive to 2:30 in Indianapolis. So what's up with that?
Well, he's not in control of the log
ride. He's not in control of the log ride.
That's what my driver's son also said at one point when he was like 11 and got scared on a roller coaster. Wait a minute, you want to drive race cars? Yeah, but I'm in charge of the race car.
It's a log roll. It's a log ride, Simon. So that was good fun. And I, as you mentioned, Joseph did a nice job and knows his football.
We talked last week about an improved television package for Canada. An improved television package for Australia. I guess the Fox outlet there is going to have all the races on live?
I don't know all the details, but I know that from what my
Foxtel,
what the reaction seems to be is that the Australians are pleased. Like the Canadians, I think they'd still like more.
Sure.
But it's a step in the right direction, and hats off to our crew, to Stephen Stark's led crew to make that happen.
Formula One opens up this weekend as well, I
we think.
Well, there's no fans there.
Yeah,
the fans
right.
have, and it makes some more sense. So Formula One is based on international television. And that's how the NCAA tournament can survive in the worst case scenario, because it, let's face it, a lot of those afternoon games are fairly empty to begin with. It is a television event. So they can still, it's not ideal, but they can still survive. I guess Bernie Ecclestone floated the idea of having no fans at one point anyway because, hey, he didn't make any money off that. He wanted the TV rights was all that mattered. He'd rather you stay home and watch on television. But ESPN's outlets have all the coverage for Formula One again this season. So check your listings on ESPNU and 2, and the race itself is on ESPN a little after midnight Eastern time on Sunday morning. So I saw this from our buddy Adam Stern from SBJ that Formula One has announced a new major deal with Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil company, Aramco, I think is how it's pronounced, to become a title sponsor of the United States Grand Prix in Texas. And the sponsorship is likely worth around $25 million annually.
Wow.
So when, you know, the question that I think all of us have been asking is, how is that event going to survive if indeed they do lose the state subsidy, which has been in jeopardy? They didn't get it last year, and I haven't heard what's on the front for that. Well, that would be one way. Formula One has decided we need to do what we can, make this event work. They need to find some funding for that. So Formula One may have just simply decided, we'll find the funding for you, and that's the idea of giving them a break. Sanctioning fee is if we go find the title sponsor for you, and that event can continue.
I bet they kept a part of it, though.
I'm sure they're keeping a part of it. I don't imagine the entire $25 million is going, but that does make it.
Exactly.
Because I didn't see how that was going to work moving forward. NASCAR, we've talked about when the schedule is going to come out. And by the way, anytime I see the Phoenix race there, I always think, boy, I wish somehow that could work. And when they start talking about doubleheaders, maybe there's a way to make that happen. And let's face it, everything starts over now with Roger Penske in charge. Things will be rethought, revisited. And in an interview with the Arizona Republic, he was asked, would you like to bring IndyCar back to Phoenix? And Roger said, I'd love to come back to Phoenix. I was very sorry to see us leave there. I want an opportunity to sit down with the people in Daytona, meaning NASCAR executives that own the track, and see what we can do to try to build the race there. That's a great oval race. We had a decent crowd, but you've got to build on it. We're going to run in Richmond now. If we can run Richmond less than a mile, why not Phoenix? Let's see what NASCAR does. Maybe we could do a race on Saturday when the NASCAR guys are there.
By the way, let's keep in mind that if Roger Penske's organization is big, non-racing is big in a lot of markets. It's especially big in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. That's one of his big markets.
His museum is in Scottsdale?
Yep, it's in Scottsdale, and all his dealerships are housed in one big operation. He loves Phoenix, and I would put a little oomph behind that one.
And already now, NASCAR is saying probably not going to happen in a schedule for April 1st. So if indeed there is any conversation about a doubleheader with IndyCar in 2021, this gives them a little more time to put something together. So that could possibly be in the working. Tony Stewart's going to run in Indianapolis in the Xfinity race on the road course. That's cool.
That'll be exciting. And smoke is always exciting.
And the final NASCAR note of significance is, it's no longer speed weeks. We already got the first little nugget of 2021, and we mentioned this a few weeks ago because of where the Super Bowl goes, where the Busch Clash has been. That would be the same weekend as the Super Bowl. So NASCAR is going to condense everything into 1 week. The Busch Clash also on the road course where the Rolex 24 is run. And this also helps them shorten up the season just a little bit. And that is going to run on a Tuesday evening, the Tuesday evening of the Daytona 500. They'll use this year's cars because they have a new car coming up next year. So those will debut on the oval. And then pole qualifying will be on Wednesday. The duels will be on Thursday. The ARCA race and the Xfinity race are going to be the day before the Daytona 500. Hmm. So all that has changed in 2021 for NASCAR. And there's still a lot of thought that you're going to be seeing some races go away and some newer venues come in play as soon as 2021. All right, to your tweets and more coming up in a moment. Stick with us. It's Trackside. All right, still time for one more segment. And we started off talking about the impact of the coronavirus on the sports world and racing. And even this afternoon, since I really went through the internet, a lot of things have changed. I mentioned how the NCAA tournament is probably one. It's a television show in many ways that could go on without fans, and it indeed will go on without fans. And here in Indianapolis, the Big Ten tournament, there are fans at the Fieldhouse right now, but tomorrow night there will not be. It will just be, as they say, friends and family only
and essentials starting tomorrow in the Big Ten tournament. In the motorsports world today, Formula E reportedly suspended operations for a couple of months. The Supercross event in Seattle, March 28th, has been postponed. We talked about MotoGP. Long Beach had an article in the LA Times that it's still on. Sebring, the WEC, and the IndyCar race, or I'm sorry, the sports car race, they're still on for next weekend. And COTA is still on for IndyCar. It's, quote, under review by Austin Public Health. Ultimately, these things change every day. So the plan one day could change the next day. But I do feel better about outdoor events, and hopefully the measures that leadership has taken will slow down the progress and we can start to get back to normalcy as soon as possible. By the way, also I saw a tweet from Robbie Wickens, who's going to be there this weekend, and just kind of a reminder, remember last year how a lot of people were basically slapping him on the back lightly, and his nerve issues made that sometimes painful. So the message is now he's more susceptible than the rest of us. There are just different complications involved with his injuries. So he said, I'll still sign some autographs, but no close contact. So just kind of respect Robbie's space if you see him out over the weekend, and no handshaking or anything like that. Wanted to also mention the Road to Indy coming up this weekend. All three levels will be at St. Petersburg, and they've had tests in the last week. And I do think Indy Lights is shaping up to be another really competitive season with a lot of possibilities. So you've got Kyle Kirkwood, who, you know, we've had on the show before, and ask him to just detail the races that he didn't win over a couple of years. So he's with Andretti Autosport, and you would think he might be the favorite after dominating in USF 2000, coming from behind to win last year in Indy Pro 2000, but he had to get some things done to do that last year. And Rasmus Lind is one of the guys that he's going to be dealing with once again. He finished second to Kirkwood last year. He's in a Ballardi car, so I think he'll be good. Toby Sowery finished third last year in a season where he wasn't even expected to be there all season. He's with Ballardi this year. Remember Santi Arutia, who almost won the championship until the final couple of corners one year, finished second again, third another year. He's got 8 career wins. He's back. Robert McGinnis is back for his second year with Andretti. And David Malukas, a very young driver, is back with his family-owned team, HMD. So I think we'll see some good stuff in store. Those races are on NBC Sports Gold Live. I'll be hosting many of them, including this weekend, with James Hinchcliffe on Saturday and Tony Kanaan on Sunday. And Katie Hargett will be in the pits for us. In Indy Pro 2000, at their test at Homestead this past week, a couple of guests on the show over the winter did well. Braden Eaves, who is an Ohio kid for Exclusive, was the fastest. Hunter McElroy we had on the show, he was third fastest. And Parker Thompson was second fastest. And in USF 2000, I'll admit I'm keeping probably a closer eye there because some of these kids have raced against Jackson. And I'll admit I was kind of happy to see Prescott Campbell as the fastest. So he's the kid that Jackson raced wheel-to-wheel with, ultimately lost the championship by a combined about 0.2 of a second to Prescott last year. And in all fairness, a couple of other kids could say the same thing. The top four were all really close. But Prescott is, I thought, was really good, and he showed it. In his first time in a USF 2000 car with really others on track, he was fastest over the weekend. Rubens Barrichello's son, Eduardo, was second fastest. And Josh Green, who my son raced against and actually finished ahead of in the F1600 event he did last year, he's a Team USA scholarship winner. He was third quick, so that was good to see, and everything will be going on this weekend at St. Pete. And finally, in the self-promotion standpoint, we had our partner appreciation night for Jackson Lee Racing at Indy Simulation at Pit Fit, the simulator place that Jackson trains and works at, and it was somewhat too kind of a trial run to see how that would work for a corporate event. And it worked well. We had, I think, 16 people in there, and I think it's a good space for 15, maybe 20 people top, something like that. So anywhere in the 10 to 17 or 18 people range, if you want to do some hospitality, event hosting, and you've got the simulator there as well to have some fun on throughout the evening. And there's an opportunity to have some camaraderie on the north side of Indianapolis. We're out of time for tonight. We will be back. I think it's next Tuesday, but to be honest, I'm not really sure. And it probably depends on the Butler schedule. So check your local listings for when we are back next week. It is tentatively scheduled for Tuesday night. Thanks to Brad Huber back in our studios. For Kurt Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Make sure you're joining us via all the outlets here on the radio, IndyCar.com, NBC Sports Gold, and NBCSN. This weekend from St. Petersburg.